Welcome to the Yacht Rock Show with your captain, Eddie Gans, with First Mate Joe Carlisle and Samir at the wheel. And here's your host, Eddie Gans.
Welcome aboard, my friends, and get ready.
Yeah, get ready is right, man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Eddie is a little more fired up than usual, folks, because we have a very, very, that's right, I said three verys.
Yes.
Three very, very special episode of the Yacht Rock Show. It's an interview show.
Oh, my God.
And it's the interview.
Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. When I talk about strap yourself in.
Yeah, this is the reason why Eddie's been practicing strap yourself in, because now you're really going to have to.
Yes. This is...
Go ahead.
I tell you, I've been waiting. Joe, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I've been waiting for this
since
for
day
how long?
One.
Since day one.
It was all being done to get this interview.
Damn
now,
right.
Now we could stop doing the show. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed it. So we'll see you later.
The Yacht Rock Show has arrived. Okay? Why? Because we got the one and only Steve Lukather tonight. On the Yacht Rock Show. That's right.
But be warned, ladies and gentlemen, it's parental discretion is advised. Woo! Because although the Yacht Rock Show has been pretty benign and pretty tame in the past, there is some adult language and adult situations come up during our conversation with Steve.
Joe was good, but I dropped a few bombs here and there, and I was definitely more.
Right. He actually asked before we went on air. He asked him, "Is it all right if I curse?" I said, "Yeah." We said, "Be yourself. Just be yourself."
I think he said, "Is it all right if I be myself?" Correct?
I took that as, "Is it all right if I drop F bombs left and right?" And another sexual innuendo thing. So you'll hear. Hopefully nobody's offended, and if you are, put the kids to bed and listen to it on your own time.
But I tell you, Steve, look at that. And like Samir said, it's just what he expected, right? Right?
What you'd expect. We've got IDs from him in the past.
Yeah.
And you could hear his like laid back, relaxed rock star. You know, he's kind of a late. I wanted to ask him too. I didn't get to ask him, but like he's kind of a late in life rock star. And I feel like early on he was like the somewhat clean cut session guy. Always had a button-down shirt on, had a little bit longer hair, but now he's got the tattoos and the dark hair and the chains and the, you know, he's coming to his own as a rock star. Because I think for most of Toto, he got pigeonholed as they were soft rock, and he wanted everybody to know that he was a rocker at heart.
Right.
And now it's his time to do that. So he's really doing what he wants, and
we spoke about his
solo album where that really comes through. It's like a love letter to the early 70s. I thought it was late 60s, but he corrected me. He said it was early 70s.
It's early 70s, yeah.
Right.
Now, it's funny. You're going to hear me very excited. Joe is the same. God bless you. But me, I'm over the top. But you know what? Who cares? I mean, I was telling you, Joe. I was just so excited.
Yeah.
I got these butterflies.
That's great.
And let me tell you.
You never get starstruck.
You know it.
Right.
Thank you. I mean, listen, I've been next to in an elevator with Michael Jackson and Diana Ross when I worked at BlackRock at CBS. Okay, folks?
Yeah.
And that did nothing for me. I was like, okay, whatever. Big deal. I've met many, many, many stars. Yeah. I'm not trying to toot my horn here, Joe.
Why do you think Steve made you a little nervous? Because you revere him so much, right?
It's just that he's, you know, but I he love
meant a
his
lot
humility.
For a lot of years.
Yeah, he's meant a lot. He's my favorite guitar player.
Yeah.
My favorite. I don't care, Robin Ford, all these guys that are great. Nah, I just love the way he plays. That's it.
Yeah. And so do legions of fans.
Right.
So as you usually say, without any further,
Joe and I did this for you guys. We did it for us, but we did it for you and for Ray.
Yeah, so again, I'll say parental discretion is advised. There is some racy language, but
folks,
you sit back and enjoy.
Strap yourself in. I ain't kidding. Here is our interview with Steve Lukather.
Jesus Christ, I think my balls dropped a half an inch.
Steve Lukather. Oh my God.
Yeah. You know, Steve, you have cans on?
Don't bring God into this. It's not his fault.
Oh, trust me. We're no angels here. You believe me.
Yeah, we might have to put a parental advisory at the beginning of this episode.
Well, am I allowed to be myself, or do I?
Absolutely. We're going to say that. I like to curse too. So at least
so
now, Joe.
It's a matter of cursing, it accidentally sneaks out. I'm not trying to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I hear you.
Whenever you're comfortable.
At this point, in my life, I don't think it's like I'm trying to swear to impress or.
No, I
don't. Or what do you call it? To enrage people.
Right, right.
I am. My girlfriend is naked here in front of me, though.
Obi, hey.
We should have zoomed.
Yeah, baby.
See what you missed out on?
Oh, Jesus.
All right, Joe, go ahead.
He's got a really big cock, too.
I love it.
Honey, come over here. Let me gobble on it. Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, you
want
to?
Ooh.
I want a little taste.
Oh, no. I want a little num-num.
This is great.
Mind if I numb your breath?
You guys are missing all the good shit.
Remember the joke about the doctor? Do you mind if I numb your breasts? Num, 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 num.
I'm loving this.
All right, so why don't we do a formal beginning?
Okay. Well, folks, I've been waiting for this for a long time. If you know me, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about my favorite guitar player of all time. Number one for me in my book. Mr. Steve Lukather.
Thank you, sir. That's a big introduction. I'm not worthy of any of that.
Oh, please.
Come on, show
you. Thank you.
Thank you for your kindness, though.
Are you kidding me? The Yacht Rock world is freaking out right now. Oh, yeah.
What do you want to know, guys?
Well, first of all, let's get right to the point. First of all, congrats on the new album. It's fucking slamming.
Thank you very much. It was very self-indulgent, but I had a blast doing it. And, it's done really well for me. I mean, I wish I could go out and play tomorrow, but we'll have to wait till next year.
So that's what I've heard, right? So you won't be going out till next year?
Not till 2022, but we got big plans. We're ready to rock. You know, we just need a little rehearsal and we're ready to go.
I know you got a new incarnation of Toto.
Yeah, man. I mean, surprisingly enough, it just sort of fell together. By accident, I mean, being that Joseph and I both had solo records out and same label, and we were going to go work together anyway, and Paige worked on both records. He was all over mine.
Awesome.
And since, you know, we lost the suit, but we just give a percentage to people that get their percentages, and we can go out and work. Might as well do it. I'm not going to, you know, I've been there. There's 15 incarnations of the band. I've been in all of them. Joe's been a strong part of the... Our success, and you know, and we're going to continue on, and we just needed to readjust things financially and everything else, and put some fresh meat in there, and we're just excited about another chapter, man.
That's awesome.
I want to do this. I mean, this
That's
music
great.
I've been
great.
Making for damn near 45 years.
So, Steve, who's the new lineup?
The new lineup is Robert Sputt Searight from Snarky Puppy on drums.
Oh, wow.
John Pierce on bass from, you know, most notably from Huey Lewis's band, but he's been a session guy, my oldest friend in the world. He was in Still Life when we were in high school. And then we got this young kid, Steve Maggiore, who plays second keyboards and sings all the crazy high parts. And he's a sweetheart of a man and a great player and everybody's really hot to go. And then we got, of course, X is coming back on keyboards. And Warren Ham is back. I can't leave home without Warren Ham. He is one of the great gifts of life to any band. And he just makes everything better. He can do so much. Sings great. Horns, percussion. We've had to, you know, lean up a little bit because of, you know, costs, hard costs. You know, things are going to be different now. Who knows what... You know, cancellation insurances in a COVID world, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of parameters here, but it's looking up. People are going out this year. I'm really excited and really hopeful, and I'm praying for, a risk-free, sick-free situation where everybody goes away having a good time and we're back in business again. I wish that for all the artists out there.
That's true.
It may be sooner than you think. I mean, they're talking about late summer, being able to have full capacity.
Well, that just makes me smile. That just means I'm going to be out there, hopefully in the spring, in the U.S. and then summer in Europe.
So how
and then we're going to go until they don't want to see us no more.
So you and Joseph did these tandem albums. Was there any talk about doing them as a Toto effort? Or
no, never, because they're both really completely different records. Mine was done live in 8 days, and he spent months working on his. You know, it's completely different concept. You know, from a production level and songwriting level. And I wanted to just get in there and jam, but I didn't want to do like just an all instrumental play of melody, then solo and play. You know, same thing, 10 songs. You know. I wanted to jam in the context of great songs with, you know, and so it felt good to do it this way. So, and he did it his way, and they're both cool in their own ways, and they both done really well for us. And
absolutely,
we're going to incorporate that, you know, in the Toto set's going to be all the big hits that everybody wants to hear. Then the deep cuts, the different ones that we've been doing, then we've been doing on the last tour. And then we're going to incorporate a couple of solo tunes from his record and my record.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, it's going to be a, open up the concept of a broader set list down the line as well.
Yeah, his sounds more like it could actually be a Toto thing, but yours is more like a love letter to the 60s. I hear a lot of
70s
sounds.
70s. Early 70s.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
I know.
And, you know, so, I mean, all I can say is, you know, things are looking brighter. You know, I mean, sitting around my house long enough, I'm ready to get back on the road again.
Really?
On the road again?
Yeah, right on cue. Willie Nelson.
I can't wait to get on the road again. Let's do it.
Yeah, Dad, ask a nice deep question.
No, listen. Remember her. From Joseph Williams album.
Yeah.
Is that all you there? Or you and Michael Landau?
Me and Landau.
Aha!
Told you.
I
can hear the two of you. I can pick you apart. And Eddie said, no, it's all you.
No, it's me and Mike.
Okay. Beautiful what you did there. Are you playing in the string part? Love that.
I don't remember.
Oh man. But that song is sick.
Sick. Yeah, it's a great one.
I love it. Well, listen. I wanted to ask you. First of all, the whole Yacht Rock thing. How well are you informed about the Yacht Rock? Did anyone ever tell you what it's all about? The meat and potatoes?
I mean, you know, I thought everybody was making fun of us. You know? But, you know, at the same time, I make fun of us. I mean, you know, after all these years, after everything has been said and done, you think I don't laugh at the Family Guy thing? That was the greatest thing in the world. You know, South Park, all the bits on us. I mean, it's just pop culture, man. It's like nobody laughs harder than us. And the whole Africa phenomenon was just really ridiculous. I mean, who would have seen that coming? We recorded it in 1981, for God's sake, and buried it on the record because we were like, wow, this is a weird tune. And now it becomes like the golden carrot in the set list. So what can I say? It's brought us a young audience, and, you know, it really helped the career at this point. And then all of a sudden we slammed into a brick wall with this virus. And the good news is we're able to catch up where we left off, and it's going to be a little different, but it's going to be cool. You know, every time we change it up, people are like, oh, I don't know, it's not Toto anymore. Well, no, it's not Toto from 1978 or 1985 or from 1992 or 2019 for that matter.
Right.
It's new. I mean, you know, there are people that are not with us anymore. David can't tour because of his medical issues, but he's very much a part of the organization. Are still our fearless leader and comes to the rehearsals, makes it right, and he'll show up once in a while, you know, if he can get there, you know, then he can medically safely be there. But
right.
You know, we're carrying on just the way we've carried on before.
I mean,
there's been
awesome
times in the band where it's been like this, you know, like, you know, when Bobby came back, it was just me and him and a completely different band. So people were weirded out by that at first, but, you know, I think once everybody hears it and sees it, that's why we're putting out the DVD, because so many people wanted it, and it was a one-shot deal. We said, well, this will give us a chance to introduce the band. There's a great companion interview DVD with me, Joe, and David, and then all the new guys explaining why we're doing this and what brought us to it in more detail than we have time for here.
Right.
Right.
So, I wanted to talk. Do you know J.D. Rizner? Right. J.D. Rizner? From the Beyond Yacht Rock?
I know the name.
Yes. You know the name. Well, I want to be clear. Joe and I did not invent the term.
No, I know. I saw we saw the YouTube thing I did, which was pretty stupid and silly. You know, he's probably more pissed off he didn't copyright Yacht Rock himself.
That's what we were saying.
But you know, I don't really know. I just figured that to me, I look at it as like, well, that's all the session work I did from the late 70s to the 90s.
It is.
And with us mixed in there, and it's like, hey, you guys play a lot of our music, and I don't care what you call it. Hey, if people like it, I'm in.
You have the right attitude. Do you know who doesn't like it?
Who?
Boz Gags. He doesn't. Does not like the term. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. He's not a fan. Whatever, man.
I know.
There are worse things to worry about in the world if you watch the news.
Oh, please. Exactly.
You know, I'm just happy you guys play our music, and thank you for the kindness. You know,
Oh, brother.
I've been called worse than Yacht Rock, believe me.
Well, let me tell you, because I got to be clear about the Yacht Rock term. So in order for it to be a Yacht Rock song...
Where's my fucking yacht, man?
I know, you should have one.
I should, but I'm telling you. They're very expensive to keep up. I need staff and everything.
That's your problem. You should have saved your money.
No. This whole thing should be gratis. Consider.
I'd love it. So listen, let me get the term out. In order for it to be a Yacht Rock song, so that you'll know, the next time somebody brings up the conversation, you'll say, whoa, wait a minute. It's a pop rock song infused with elements of jazz, R&B, and even disco. Okay? So now you know what it takes to be a Yacht Rock song. Because a lot of people out there think that all soft rock is Yacht Rock. That's not true.
Okay. Soft rock sounds, you know, it just sounds limp. Soft.
I know.
And that was the point.
Acid rock.
Soft. Yeah, I mean, it's like, what's soft about it?
Well, you never liked that term, right? Or you don't care?
I don't like terms in general. It's music. You know what I mean? But how many now everything has to have a subgenre? You know what I mean?
So,
whatever. Okay. You know, the people that come to our shows, people listen to your show to come. Hey, man. I don't think they care what you call. They're just digging the music. You know?
That's right.
So, I mean, I've been doing this for too long. I appreciate any support we get.
That's great, man. I love your humility. You know?
No, it's just, man, I've been doing this a long time. I'm honored to still be able to look forward to it still being my job. Because I hate fucking retirement.
Oh, it sucks. You know what I mean? Oh, absolutely.
I like being home, and it's got its good parts. But you know, I've been doing this my whole life since I was single digits. You know, and just to stop now.
Yeah.
When I'm still, you know, I still got some fight left before I'm like, you know.
Absolutely.
Before they start to, you know.
Yeah.
Throwing dirt in my face. And stuff, you
know? Take us back to before Toto.
Yeah,
and that period between you, of course, everybody knows the story, which everybody has, the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and it changed your life. From that point to '77, where Toto started.
What's a young Steve Lukather doing in that period? Well, when I got into high school, I met the Picaro brothers, first Steve Picaro, and he invited me and Mike Landau, who I've known since I was 12. We've been brothers for that long, John Pierce longer. But, you know, Steven, and then I met, you know, his brothers, Mike and Jeff, and Jeff was in Steely Dan at the time, and Carlos Vega was our drummer, John Pierce was our bass player, Steve on keyboards, me and Mike on guitar, we had Charlie Randazzo on vocals, we had Laurie Stratton on vocals, Gina Law, and we covered mostly Steely Dan stuff, and then Paige was working with Steely at the time, and he was just before Boz, or during the Silk Degrees era, and we were still in school, and we were playing Steely Dan stuff. I mean, like, we were like, before there was a tribute band name, we were basically a Steely tribute band. Played a lot of Yes stuff and a lot of double guitar stuff, anything that had guitar harmony stuff in it, we were doing. And Jeff and Dave used to come down and sit in with the band, and we built up a rapport, and all I ever wanted to do was be in a band with Jeff Vaccaro and David Bates. You know? Then the Boz thing happened, blew up, and then a guitar spot opened for me, and Jeff and Jay Winding and all Steve Vaccaro and all the guys recommended me, and I got the gig, man. And that changed my life. And that was pre-Toto.
Yeah. All those names.
Boz was really good to me, and he featured me and made a big deal and invited me to play on Down 2, then left, and gave me a big solo, which really kick-started my career. And David Foster really helped me out, Jay Graydon, of course, and Lee Ritenour. All the great legendary guys at the time were really helping me out, and it was the great best times of my life.
But you know what's funny? When I heard about David Foster getting stupid at the Grammys, I was like, really? What happened?
I missed it.
I mean, he was insulted. He wasn't happy for you guys when you guys won.
He just stopped talking to us, man. He just stopped talking to us, man.
I can't believe that.
We haven't really been friends since.
Kind of petty.
That's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I don't know. At first it was like really hurtful, but people change, you know?
Wow.
I can say early in my career, I learned so much from him. He was a great musical influence to me. I missed the guy as a friend, but hey, man, life goes on, you know?
Absolutely.
He really helped me, so I can never say anything bad about the guy.
Now, we love what he did for Chicago. They were dying.
Brilliant musician, man.
I got
to see it up close. I mean, it was effortless for him. He's a brilliant musician.
Absolutely. So I love what you did. For Earth, Wind & Fire, Faces.
Well, that was a great honor for me, being, Earth, Wind & Fire, one of my favorite bands of all time. I was blown away to get the call. And just to sit in there with Maurice White and George Massenberger, it was like, wow. I was playing on an Al McKay song, which is interesting because I've known Al since I was 17. I was a big, huge fan. One of the best rhythm guitar players out there. He wrote the song.
Back on the road.
And then they called me to do the solo. I think he was a little miffed by that, you know. Al, I love you, man. It wasn't me, man. But it's cool now. You know, I mean, he knew it wasn't my call. You know?
Right. That intro. Whose idea was that for that song, Back on the Road? Did they come up with this?
I don't know which part. I mean, it's been,
you know, like, the intro, it's like a heavy metal intro.
Well, heavy metal. I mean, have you listened to heavy metal lately? I would put maybe a hard rock edge to it, and that would have been me because I would have been called to do that. That's what I did.
Right. Yeah, the intro, I love it.
I came up with the lines and stuff like that myself.
What is one disco song? Because I know you probably did a lot. But is there one that comes to mind that you said, I like that one? And were you a fan?
Donna Summer stuff was cool. I don't remember which tracks. But, I got to work with her on several levels. I got to work with her with Quincy Jones, and I got to write a song with her and Foster. And that was fun. And she was just wonderful. And God bless her.
So you were on the album that Quincy Jones produced?
Yeah, I was on that, but I did some of the early shit too, man.
You did.
We were in this, it was like Giorgio Moroder and all those guys had this studio called Rusk, and they just like get us guys in there and we just be like, play this, and they just put the charts in front of us and then there's no singer. And we just do all these tracks and, one or two takes, boom, done. It was great. It was painless, and we had fun and got paid. And then all of a sudden, you'd hear something on the radio and go, wait, is that me? And then you hear a singer, and you're like, oh, that's Donna Summer.
That was you and Jay Graydon, correct?
Me and Jay, Ray Parker Jr., too. We did a lot of stuff together.
Right.
Yeah, he's such a brilliant rhythm player, man.
He is, huh?
Ray, oh, we're still dear friends, man. He's one of the greatest cats of all time.
It's funny. I know that you knew the late David Williams.
Oh, yeah, one of the funkiest cats ever. David and Ray are my two favorite rhythm guitar players, man. And Ray and Al McKay, I have to say, from that era. You know what I mean? There's a lot of great cats now. I mean, I'm just saying these guys were like they started the shit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That funky rhythm and stuff, man. Well, I had to learn how to do that. See, that was one of the things. I could play that shit, and I could also play the hard rock stuff. Those guys weren't really hard rock players, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I showed up with a Les Paul and a Marshall or a modded Fender amp that would really crank, you know? And they were playing, like, 335s and more jazz guitars, you know?
Well, that's what great. I love about
they
you.
They played fantastic, but I was just young and had a different flavor. You know?
Right, right. But see, that's what I love about you, that you could get funky, and at the same time, you could fucking rock out. It was, you know, not many players could do that.
Well, I never really thought about it. I thought that was the job, so I just, you know, it felt natural to me. I was lucky to have such great teachers. When you sit next to the greats, it rubs off on you, man. And I still, they're all my friends, and I still revere them and treat them with the same respect I did when I first met them.
Well, I found out just recently that Jeff Porcaro was and I think Steve and David also were on Chanson. Do you remember that group?
Yeah,
that David Emma? Don't hold
also
back.
Also James Jamison Jr.
Right.
Right.
Man,
great guys.
Oh, my God. That song, Don't Hold Back. If it feels good, do it. Oh, my God. Right? Woo! Jeff kicking it there. Oh, my God.
We used to hang out almost daily at Jeff's house, you know?
Wow. He also played on the originals. Going down to Love Town. I'm going to take my body down. That was Jeff Porcaro. I was like, what?
Hey, man, Jeff, everybody wanted Jeff, man. Jeff just made everybody sound better. He made everything better. He was the coolest. He'd walk into the room, it would light up, man. He just was a special human being, and I was deeply honored to call him a very, very close soul brother, man.
Let me tell you.
He changed my life. I mean, he introduced me. That he recommended me for so much stuff. I mean, I owe him so much.
We would be very touched. Joe and I were very touched today. It was very moving when we heard,
on the day he passed.
We choked up.
We choked up.
Oh, man. Well, big time.
Big time.
When?
No, we're listening to the audiobook.
Oh, you know.
It's very moving.
It's very moving.
Yeah, well, you know, those stories are hard to tell, man.
But at least we hear the truth. Because a lot of bullshit, you know, people were saying, you know, like you were saying, I overdosed on coke and all this.
You know, that's, fuck that shit. I mean, the funny thing about that, listen, everybody did blow back then. Listen, you know,
everybody.
If Bobby hadn't got busted, it wouldn't be following us around like a mistake. You know what I mean? It's a draft.
Yeah.
You know, we were no worse or better than anybody else. And that was a long time ago. I mean, come on, man. There's limitations. You know, I'm going to be 64 this year, for fuck's sake. You know?
Right.
You think we're doing blow? I mean, come on.
Oh, hell no.
I mean, come on. I haven't had a drink in almost 12 years. You know?
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we
so
all
how do you get? How do you get on Quincy Jones' radar? They use you guys on the Thriller album and all. That's just through session work? I mean,
well, I was recommended by David Foster, and I did the Dude album.
Yeah.
Which was up for a Grammy and everything, and I got to work with Stevie Wonder and Quincy, and it was magical, man. And it was just magical. I was just a kid, like 22 years old.
Yeah.
And then he invited me. He goes, "Look, Michael, this is after Off the Wall." And then Michael's going to do the Thriller record, and he said, "Look, I want you to be on this record, man." I'm like, "Are you kidding me? I'm in." And, you know, and it just happened, you know, and the first thing we did was the Paul McCartney duet. So, Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson at the same time. And Paige was there. It was, I mean, we were tripping, man. Then all of a sudden, Paul and Linda walk in. It's like Jeff's smoking a joint, and Paul goes, "Oh, I smell musicians."
That's funny.
And, like, you know, and we just had the best time ever. And then Paul and Linda invited us to be in the movie, give my regards to Bryce.
Right.
We got to spend time. And I cherished that time, you know. It was just, they were so wonderful to us. And I've had a chance to work with Paul on a couple of other occasions. And George became a friend of mine, and he played with us at the Jeff Tribute in 92. Mm-hmm. And we were hanging out a bunch. And then he tragically got stabbed and then got sick again. We lost him, you know. But I cherished the times that I had with him. And then, of course, Ringo, you know, become one of my closest friends.
Of course.
Somebody I adore beyond words.
Absolutely.
Just made me a better human being, you know. And I've just been able to work this whole thing out. We're working on, Joseph Williams and I have written a couple of songs for him on this new two EPs he's got coming out.
Really?
So that's exciting. And you'll hear that. I mean, it's really interesting. You know, we wrote him these songs for him lyrically and everything like that, you know, but we were, you know, we went real Beatles with it and we had a blast, you know.
Right.
It's like a dream come true, a song you write, and then there's Ringo Starr's voice coming out of it.
That's
on the last album, I got to write two songs to Ringo, and Paul McCartney played bass on them. So it's like me, Paul, and Ringo. It's like, oh, wow.
Wow.
I can die now.
Yikes, really. Steve, so with those three guys, you had rub doubles with those three Beatles. Anything before 1980 with John Lennon? Any past?
No,
nothing at all?
I was never able to meet them, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something I, you know, hey, would have been an honor. But you know what? I certainly did okay.
Yeah, you did pretty good.
You know, Ringo's a treasure to me, man. I would run in front of a bullet for him.
Wow.
Just because he's so wonderful. I mean,
yeah.
If his name was Bob Jones and he was just a guy I met, he'd be my best friend.
And let me tell you, he's 80 years old?
It's scary.
He looks fucking unbelievable.
It's scary. But I got to tell you, the guy works at it.
Oh, he does.
His diet, his workout regime is terrifying. I mean, he's so rid, no sugar, no nothing, no toxic, anything.
Right.
And he's, and most importantly, you know, he's so mellow, no stress. You know, he's happy. He's beautiful. He's got a beautiful wife. Oh, gosh, I adore Barbara. She's so wonderful. And she's so beautiful. Really is.
I could relax, too, if I had Beatles.
Inside and out. Inside and out.
What's that, Joe?
I could relax too if I had Beatles money.
Well, you know, that's besides the point, man.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
The cat's a real human being, you know? Yeah. Yeah, he made a lot of money. You know what? He deserves a penny of it. These guys changed the world, man.
Absolutely.
You know, and he's certainly, you never know. You know, he doesn't carry himself. Hello, my man. This is my son just came out here to say hello to me, my 10-year-old.
Ah.
What does he play on? Get him on the mic.
You're thinking of my older son, man.
He's joking.
No, I'm joking around.
No, we know. So, yeah, we know about Trip.
We just had a birthday yesterday, man.
All right.
Happy birthday.
Yo.
Who was the kid that we knew that played with Trev? You knew him.
Taryn Gray? I don't know.
That's very possible, man. I don't know, man. He played with so many people. He's good. You know, he's producing records now for major labels. He's got all kinds of wonderful shit going on. You know, the band LaVara. Is that
LaVara?
you know, he that was his baby. And, you know, he's got all kinds of other positive shit together. We did the Sammy Hagar show together. He played bass.
Oh, I saw that.
That was fun. That came out of the blue. You know, that was right before Ed passed, you know.
Right.
I don't think I'll ever get over that. You know, that one hurt real bad. That's I've lost so many of my closest friends the past few years. It's scary. And, you know, I just... You know, the wagons are circling. I better make the most of what's left. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I just got my full physical. You know what I mean? I go in there and he's like, hey, man, you're in wonderful shape, man. All right, I'm the only guy that lost weight during the pandemic.
No, me too.
No, me too.
I just, you know, I have my girlfriend is such a great cook. And you know, we don't eat that much. You know what I mean? As you get older and you just, you know.
Right.
You know, I'm not sitting around with my, I don't. Have my house filled with shit, you know, although I do have kids and keep it around. But, you know, I'm just not a sloth, you know what I mean?
I love it. I lost 60 pounds. So believe me. Oh, yeah. How?
Sounds like it's going to turn into an infomercial.
I got all
the music, please.
I'll tell you the truth, Steve. I got all stressed out.
Right, wait a second. Does your right arm look like Popeye?
I should be so lucky.
Let's check the computer history real quick. And we'll
I got all stressed out, bro. I don't want to get into it, but it was that whole COVID shit.
That drove me crazy.
And all the negativity. I don't have to tell you.
No, I had to turn it off, man.
Me too.
Too.
It was too much. It was like, you know, I didn't turn the TV on for almost a year.
I believe it.
I mean, I read the headline news. I'm not an idiot, but, you know, I didn't get consumed by it, you know?
Right.
Well, I like people that sit around and either watch CNN or Fox News or something like that and just yell at the TV all day long and eat potato chips and fucking die of a heart attack, you know?
Yeah,
for what reason? Who wins there?
Nobody, man.
Let's talk about it. We all just be nice to each other.
Bingo.
I don't give a shit what you look like or what religion you're in or, you know, what... who you like to go home with at night, you know? How about just being nice as a human being?
That's so
true. Let everybody be. Don't push your shit on everybody. America was based upon freedom of who you are.
Right,
now, I'm
not
saying you have to be out front with it and everything like that. You know, be cool.
Be cool
is also another one you need to underline.
Be cool.
Be nice. Be cool.
So, bro.
Everybody's in a big rush to go where?
No, you're right.
You're right.
I know. It's terrible.
And I'm guilty of it too. I'm impatient.
We all are.
Yeah.
We all are.
But I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, preach or nothing like that. I mean, I should listen to my own advice sometimes. You know?
Ladies and gentlemen, now you know why his autobiography is called The Gospel According to Luke.
Yeah. Well, I took a lot of shit for that from some people.
That's perfect.
You know, the religious fanatics. You know, fanaticism of any kind always scares me. Religion doesn't scare me, but, you know, people, it's like the difference between far right, far left. I mean, you know, why can't we just be nice to each other? It comes back to that. You know, if you want to sit in your house, you know, and dress up like Adolf Hitler, that's your right. But, I mean, you don't have to go out in public, you know?
Absolutely. So how's your neighbor? Is he behaving, or are you going to...
We're pals now. I'm not pals, but I mean, we're cool.
What do you know about his neighbor?
My girlfriend made it nice.
She did? That's funny.
How do you know about his neighbor?
I never talked to the guy about it, but he knew it was him. And, you know, you'd have to be blind not to see it. That was the most... That got me more press than anything in my whole life.
I know.
As it should. You know,
my girlfriend
dares me to do something and then films it without me knowing it, then puts it up and it goes viral worldwide.
Awesome.
And here, you know, it's like people just going, yeah, I've always wanted to do that to the neighbor. But this guy messed with me. It was like purposely done. So it was, you know, it was just a silly thing.
Right.
It's not like something I'm going to do every day, you know.
Nah, I hear you.
It was an impulse of what the fuck, you know.
But that's funny, man. You cracked up the amp and you started ripping it.
Yes, and I'd like to say that I lifted it up above my dog's head. People were going, you hurt the dog. I know I would never hurt my dog. My dog's my treasure.
That's funny.
Dog sleeps right next to me.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
What's his name?
Potato. My daughter, my 13-year-old daughter named the dog.
I'm cute.
But it's a little pug. I'm a pug guy, you know. It's a little cutest pug.
Steve, do you know the name Alan Hines?
Of course I do. He's a brilliant guitar player.
Yeah, I think he's a great guitar player.
One of the best I've heard. Alan Hines, man. He's also a friend of mine. He was just
at the house. Figured that.
No, he's one of those guys, you just go, wow, I wish I could be that good.
I think you are that good.
No, I just got my little thing that I do, man. But he's one of those guys. He's got a lot of the same influences because we're around the same age, but he just took it into his own, you know.
Yeah,
he has that Holdsworthian kind of ability, you know, and very few cats can pull that off, you know, and make it his own. It doesn't sound derivative, you know. He is also a great composer, he writes beautiful music,
right? I know. I was in contact with him, he wrote a tune that I love.
Well, I hope he hears this because I do, I'm very fond of the cat.
Well, here's another question I've always wanted to ask. Steve Lukather. What do you think of Prince as a guitar player?
This is great, man. I mean, I met him before he was anything. You know, I was doing a Valerie Carter record with James Newton Howard in 1977, 78 maybe.
Right.
And he said he was producing the record. He said, "Oh, I got this new genius kid from Minneapolis coming in named Prince," and I started laughing. Prince, really. That's pretty bold, right? You know,
pretty ballsy.
I didn't know that was his real name. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he came into the room and he didn't say a fucking word. He just sat down in front of the, like, you know, on the couch where the big speakers are.
And I sat
behind the desk with James and we did the overdubs. And he didn't say shit to me. All of a sudden I play something. I just see this little head come up and the eyes would pop up and he'd disappear again. And they turned out to be Prince, as we all know him, you know. And then I was working when he was mixing Purple Rain. I was working in Studio 2 on something at Sunset Sound, and he was working in Studio 3. And he was there, you know, full Prince at 10 in the morning, sitting on the Purple Rain bike. But it wasn't on. It was like there was this group in the studio. There was a basketball court, so he liked to shoot the hoops. And, you know, I'd say, hey, man, how's it going? And I just get like a one eyebrow up, you know?
Right, right.
I'm a big fan of his music. And I think he's a great guitar player. I mean, you know, geez, you know.
I wish
he really, his image was so huge. I mean, he really played it, man, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know who the real guy is. I mean, you know, but, you know, maybe he's one of those really shy guys that just used it to his advantage. I mean, I'm speculating here. I don't know. But I'll say this. I'm a big fan of his music, man. He's a
brilliant
artist.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
So we were interviewing
your good friend, Randy Goodrum.
Oh, right, one of my favorites.
We love him, man.
Ooh.
That's a talented guy. That's another guy that can do it all.
Absolutely.
You know, the funny story how we met is he moved in behind my parents' house.
I
grew up.
Wow.
Like I met him in 1985. You know, we just started. My mom said, there's a songwriter that lives behind you. He says he knows your name, blah, blah, blah. So I said, what's his name? Randy Goodrum. I know the name Randy Goodrum. Yeah, he's a famous songwriter. And, you know, I just sort of walked around the corner, knocked on the door and said, hey, my mom said I should come over and say hi. And we started writing, you know, and we started, you know, we had a run there where we just kept writing a lot. He lived down the street, which makes it easy. Now he lives in another state. Makes it harder.
Yeah.
Right.
We talk all the time. We just emailed back and forth, you know.
But oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
My times with Randy, they're always easy. We've written a lot of music together, and they've always been cut, and always been, you know, some of them were big hits. I'll Be Over You and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So you were just running
the
right
stuff
before
we wrote on the Seventh One album. I'm real proud of.
And right.
These Chains and stuff. Those are fan favorites.
Yeah. Everybody keeps thinking about you.
I played that one live. Well, maybe we'll go next tour, you know.
Oh, I'm a bass player. I love what Mike Porcaro did on that.
Yeah, Mike. You know, Mike was silent but deadly, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean?
On like, Fahrenheit and 7-1.
He was playing harder shit than it sounded.
He was underrated. Let me tell you.
Way
I mean, the bass magazines never really made a big deal about him.
You know, like I said, he was a humble cat, man. But he could play. He laid it down, man. He was very musical.
Absolutely.
He didn't play like Jaco Pastorius. He didn't have those kind of chops, man. But he was a bass player, man. And in a day, well, people forget that. You know, I mean,
people
have 20 strings on a guitar and 15 on a bass. It's like, who's playing the guitar? Who's playing the bass? You know,
it's not bass anymore.
I mean, that's great for some music, but I'm talking about regular stuff that I would.
Meat potatoes bass. You want to hear?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's great about John Pierce. You know. He's old school, man, you know? Plays the bass. Right. I got enough flashy guys in the band. You always got to have somebody laying it down.
You had Shem Ben Schrock, right?
We did, yeah. That was an interesting experience. Next question, please.
Okay, sorry.
Ooh.
Things didn't go smooth with him.
People go in and out of bands. Come on.
I don't know, Joe.
No.
Oh, really?
It was not a positive experience.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Sincerely.
I don't want to get into it. I'm not here.
Nah. It's okay.
Sometimes people work together. Sometimes they don't.
Absolutely.
I wish him well.
Next question.
So go ahead. Ed, you want to ask about our neighbor over here up the street, the guitar player that Steve likes.
Who?
Al DiMeola.
Al D.
Great. And I'm honored
to
call him a friend.
He's 8 miles up the road from me.
Maestro. I mean, he's one of my favorite guitar players. I mean, he was the first. When I first heard him play, it was just like my jaw was on the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just, and then I met him, and then, you know, we became friends over the years, and I just adore him. And not only as a world-class genius musician, but as a wonderful human being, man. You know, we connect on that level, you know, and he's also funny as fuck, too. Al D, man, what can I say? You know, it's really interesting to have a long career and all of a sudden you become friends with your heroes, you know?
Yeah.
And it never gets old to me. You know what I mean? I'm still the humble little kid that's like, wow, Al DeYoung's calling me. You know what I mean?
That's fucking great. I love that.
You know, doesn't John McLaughlin sends me a text. I'm like, wow, fucking A. You know, I can't believe
it. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
So the other day, I got a mega compliment. Some listener wrote in and said, Eddie, thanks for playing all these Toto cuts, deep cuts. Because I'd never heard of these songs. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There's so much great music.
Well, I'm saying, see, that's why I said, that's why I love you guys. How can I be mad at Young Rock when you play all the deep cuts and you turn people on?
Yeah.
So many people think we're like three songs.
Absolutely.
I know. I'm tired of hearing about Roseanne Hold the Line and fucking Africa, okay?
I wasn't going to ask you.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, listen, hit records are a blessing and a curse.
Absolutely.
We're honored to have them, but we got to play them forever.
Right.
And, you know, and we got to remember that the crowd wants to hear this stuff. We owe it to the crowd. They made us. If we're going to sneak in some of our muso shit, we got to give them what they want. And that, for me, is a great balance because, you know, I would never play these songs at home, but you play the hit song live and they sing along with you. It's magical, man.
Absolutely.
And you're standing on the stage receiving that. It's indescribable.
I know. I miss it.
More than anything, you know, that connection with people, see people smiling or they have a happy memory or even a sad one, whatever.
Right.
It invokes emotion of some sort. And we're connecting with these people that we've never met before, and they've somehow ingratiated our music into their hearts, and they show up and it means something to them even all these years later, and you're turning them on to stuff that they never knew was on an album because you guys are fans and you dig the music, and thank you for that.
Well, let me tell you,
I'm talking for all the guys in the band.
Absolutely.
I don't need to ask him what the... We're all very grateful when you play the deep cuts and stuff. You know,
I love supporting us
and playing all this, you know, all the crazy session work that we didn't always mention in our name. Nobody ever did that for us. So thank you.
Oh, brother, my pleasure.
So many great tunes.
Like liner notes.
For example, Bottom of Your Soul.
Yeah.
What a fucking song.
Oh, man.
Woo-hoo! Yeah,
band written song, but that one had Bobby and Joe on it.
I know,
and you know, that was like a world music-y kind of a thing.
Love it.
That's a good song, actually.
Excellent. From falling in between.
Yeah,
that's right. And another one that I love from Minefields that I play on the station after you're gone.
Oh yeah.
Woo!
Thanks, man.
Love that.
Yeah, I wrote that with Phil Soussan. That we very Beatly in the way
very,
we
cut very.
It, the way we approached it. You know, everything to me, there's always a taste of the Beatles, man. It's always something that we reference. It's always something that we nod to and sneak
in.
Because, you know, that's the music that touched my heart first. And, you know, that's my all-time favorite stuff. And, you know, this timeless music. You know
it really, really is.
And the production and the ideas. If I go, when you say to somebody, I'm hearing a little Beatly thing. Like, you know, if you go, I know what you mean. You know what I mean?
Right.
It doesn't even have to be specific. People will just relate it to whatever the music is you're playing, and it sneaks in because it's still the great, the best of the best. You
know? That's right.
Another one is Chelsea.
Ah, that was
love it.
Love it.
We actually used it for a bumper, right?
Yeah, cool.
That was a band written song, you know, and Joe really ran with the lyric on that as he was. It's about where he grew up in Chelsea in the UK. His father lived there for a long time. They grew up when they were kids in the 60s, living in the London, right near Albert Hall.
Cool.
Why did his dad need to be there?
Working with the orchestra, man.
Wow.
John Williams, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
He's been John Williams his whole life. He was also a killer jazz pianist, if you didn't know that.
Right off the bat.
He used to be Johnny Williams. Johnny Williams, the bebop.
Right.
He had Oscar Peterson chops, man. This guy was a genius from another. He's still another level. You know?
Yeah.
Maestro is the maestro.
It's true.
And an incredibly nice man.
From your album Ever Changing Times. The Letting Go.
Yeah, me and Randy again.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Also,
Randy, it's funny because I would write these piano-y kind of tunes, man. I'd bring over Randy. I'm not really sure what to do with this, you know. And he would always put it in line and then start with a lyric, and I'd have a little melody, and we just gelled together. I mean, it was effortless.
Right.
Within a half hour, we had a piece of music, and he'd go, "Let me work on the lyric in this," and then I'd come in and look at the lyrics and go, "Yeah, that's close. Now, what about this?" And we'd end up editing it together, and we just had the perfect marriage of a collaboration musically and lyrically. Although his strong point was also the lyrics too. You know, I had a lot of musical ideas, you know.
Right, right.
And he had a lot of the lyrical ideas, you know. And that would change over time, but that's the way it started out.
That's right.
That's right.
So another one from your solo album. These are more Steely Dan-ish. Stab in the back.
Yeah, that was totally written as a tribute to Steely Dan.
Awesome.
I mean, I always wanted to be in Steely Dan. It's one thing. For one second, I was in Steely Dan.
In
1977, right after the Boskex tour, Irving Azoff asked me if I would do the tour. I'm going, I guess Donald Walter snuck into rehearsal and heard me playing with Boz and said, yeah. I guess that was what they were looking for, you know, be the Skunk Baxter kind of guy, you know?
Right, right.
At that time, you know, it was before Asia and all that, I think.
Right, right.
It was right before that. And so I rehearsed with Denny Diaz, the other guitar player, who's still a dear friend of mine, the jazzer, the bebopper. And we started doing it. We were, you know, getting ready to start rehearsals and stuff like that. And I guess the budget got out of control or something. I don't know. I wasn't privy to the details. But I could say I was in Steely Dan for 2 seconds, but I got to play with Donald Fagen at the Jeff tribute and play a couple Steely songs with him. And I got to jam with Walter. I once called Walter on the phone and said, look, you gotta let me play something on one of your records, man. You guys are my favorite. You don't have to pay me or nothing. He goes,
Wow.
We don't have to pay you. He goes, will you fly to New York? And I go, if you keep the soul, I'll fly.
Wow.
And I never got to do it, you know? Because at that time, Walter had stepped up and been playing more guitar. And that's what he wanted to do. It's his band, for God's sake, you know?
Right. Right,
but, you know, it was just one of those things I never got to do. And come on, I mean, you had Larry Carlton, you know, and all the great Dean Parks and all the great solos.
I'm sure you're on the short list.
Rick Derringer. I just never, you know, it just never was the what they needed at the time.
Right.
Or they didn't like me. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't my playing. It was just my personality. I'm sort of a weird guy, and those guys are real New York straight ahead cats. I mean, mine can be a bit much, I guess.
We love it, love it. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you mentioned Larry Carlton. Now, what was the story that early on you were on a session with him, and right when they hit the cue, he switched charts with you?
That was Lee Ritenour.
Lee,
my hero, Lee, man. Yeah, I was really young, and I actually had a blown tire, and I was late to a Gene Page date. This is a live orchestra, live vocals, live, you know, strings, horns, full rhythm section, vocals, everything live. And Gene wrote everything out. You know, Gene was one of the great Motown and beyond arrangers of all time.
He worked with Barry White, right?
Well, yeah, he was one of the best of all time, you know. Genius level. And while I was really young, I was still 19 years old, and I had just started working with dates, and I'd worked with Ritenour a couple weeks prior, and we kind of hit it off, you know, and he was really sweet to me. And, you know, I showed up a little bit late, you know, because I had a breakdown, you know, I just scuffle in there, I realize what's going on, I'm panic struck because I'm trying to make a name for myself and I'm blowing it, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm finally plugging, I'm getting tuned and shit like that, and Ritz trying, you know, he's looking at me, and I'm just panic, and I finally look at the chart, and my chart's like in D flat with 5 flats into all the piano part with no chord symbols anywhere. And I kind of looked over at Lee like, what the fuck? And you know, there's only 2 takes, they're going live at 2-track. There's no like, oh, let me fix my part, you know what I mean?
Right.
And Ritenour's part was like guitar one, which was like, you know, tacit, which is take it easy, fill, you know, just, you know, groove part. And he was counting it off, and Rit switched parts with me.
That's sweet.
And from that moment on, not only was he one of my closest buddies, but like, he didn't have to do that. And, you know, he could have let me choke, and that would have got around real quick, you know. It was a real heavy. I mean, this was like reading the piano part, man. This was not like a. This was beyond single note shit. This was like, you got to be kidding me, man. Who's going to listen to this? Is this even in the mix? Like, I mean, meanwhile, it's the hardest part on the stand, you know? You know, so he saved my ass on that. And I learned quickly, like, you know, I better remember whose chart, you know, whose sessions I'm taking and what, you know, I don't want to get in over my head, especially early on, you know? Yeah. I can read music, but I mean, that was beyond, I was like, you have to other level reading music, and Ritt has those chops.
Wasn't there a time that you actually couldn't read really well and you went
yeah,
home
I couldn't read
myself
it all. In
the
first,
in the closet?
For the first 7 years, I was 14 years old the first time I started taking lessons. I've been playing since I was like 7, 8 years old. And I was real good for my age. I had a great ear, but that fucked me up as far as learning how to read music properly. I had a wonderful teacher, Jimmy Weibel, who was very patient with me and really went through the basics. And it was really hard for me to have to start over again after I was already had the ability to play whatever I wanted to play on the radio or whatever else, you know.
So Miles Davis on Fahrenheit.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. He was an incredibly sweet man, man.
Really?
He actually called me, asked me to join his band right before we were going on the road. It was incredible, a surreal experience for me. But yeah, man, he took a shine to us, man.
I can't believe that's crazy.
I mean, we were all like, oh man, he's the scariest guy in the world. Listen, we hit it off like a gangbusters, man. He was hysterical, man. And he
really,
I guess
really?
He liked us, and he hung around for a week. And we that's got him to play funny. On this tune, and then he got into our band. He started, I don't care what any critic says. If Miles Davis says he likes our music, that's enough for me, man, you know?
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, I got guys, you know, some of the real heavyweight jazzers and stuff that have said kind things about us mean way more than some smarmy, wise-ass hipster critic that hates, you know, listens to punk music and expects to like our music. It's just bad casting, you know?
Those critics.
You know, please.
Well, they don't mean anything anymore because now you have the online people
that are
your fans, and sometimes they are critical, and you go, well, look, you know what? They got a point to that. Or that's, some people are just mean just for the sake of it, you know?
That's right.
You know, I try not to read that too much because I'm a sensitive cat, you know, as weird as I am. It's like, I don't need to read how great I am any more than I need to have read how much I suck. You know what I mean? I know where I stand in my own shoes, you know.
Well, let me tell you. I saw you. I got to let you know. Here in Jersey. We saw you at the 2019 State Theater. Yeah.
Excellent show.
Excellent.
Thank you.
I was there. My 19-year-old loves you.
Well, and I said, thanks a lot.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he told me to say that. If I don't say that, believe me.
I said thanks a lot.
It's awesome. You know, we could talk with you for hours.
I'll come back some other time, you know?
Okay, brother.
Thank you very much for your support. Thank you. Yacht Rock Land, you know?
Woo!
Somebody owes me a fucking yacht, but, you know, whatever.
When we get ours, we'll invite you on it.
All right, you know, it's much better to go on one than rent one, you know. Owning shit, like the idiots that buy a plane. It's like, why do you buy a plane for this?
Or you could rent it.
Unless you use it every day, it's just the biggest thing in the world.
That's true.
But hey, you know, whatever. That's why am I even talking about that? Anyway, everybody have a nice day.
Brother, thank you.
Thank you.
God bless, okay?
Thank you, Steve.
Bye now.
Take care.
Bye.
This is the Yacht Rock Show.
On the Yacht Rock Show. Lukather, how you doing?